Wednesday edition of the Senate Revenue Committee. Today we have four bills on our agenda. I will let Mr. Warner orient the committee to this morning's work, and then we'll get into some of the activities that we've planned for this morning.
Mr. Chair, on the four bills, first one is Senate Bill 469, and you have some folks from Department of Revenue who I think have come back with a solution on that administration of the Senior Property Tax Deferral Program. Senate Bill 477 is a property tax relief measure that was at the request of Senator Atkinson. He's requested that we reschedule at another time, but because of testimony was not ready. This is part of a bigger issue in terms of property tax relief, and one of the things that you'll recall from the output of OTIM that we looked at yesterday, it is the property tax at the lower end that tends to create a regressive tail in the tax burden. So I think those are issues where you've got a number of bills that are like this that would deal with the property tax relief. Then we have Senate Bill 555, which deals with long-term care insurance. This is an issue that is a follow-up to a bill that passed last session that allowed a tax credit for a long-term care insurance looking forward prospectively, but did not allow those that already had insurance policies in force. So this bill would expand that bill that passed last time. It's sponsored by Senator George. We also have Senate Bill 909, which Mr. Chair, you have agreed with Senator George to move without recommendation to the Government and Transportation Committee.
Okay, let's take care of some of the housekeeping issues first. Colleagues, my inclination is to open a hearing on Senate Bill 477, literally a tap-tap hearing. The testimony is not ready yet, but if we hold the hearing, then we can hold on to the bill. This was brought by Senator Atkinson, and it does, in fact, have a pretty significant potential impact on seniors, so we do want to keep the bill alive in our committee. I'd like to open the public hearing on Senate Bill 477. Ask if there's anyone here present who wishes to offer testimony. Has anyone signed up for 477? Hearing and seeing none, we'll go ahead and close the public hearing on 477. We'll ask Senator Atkinson to exercise due diligence in bringing testimony to support his bill. The colleagues, we are under no change in the admonition that we have to be timely in our considerations. The schedule for this committee and others in our process is to close between May 1st and May 15th. So we'll try to be on that schedule. And so if we have issues that you wish to have brought before this committee, make sure that you contact myself or Paul Warner. We have also a bill that is Senate Bill 909. I've asked the committee to put it on our agenda this morning. I have agreed with Senator George, who has brought this bill, to move it to his committee for hearings if he'd like to bring on it.
Mr. Chair?
Yes.
What committee would that be?
That's the Transportation.
Government and Transportation.
Government and Transportation.
I'm really surprised, Mr. Chair, if we've got such a time crunch, why we're moving an OLCC bill to Transportation.
And actually, many are surprised that we have an OLCC bill here in Revenue that hasn't been heard by the Government Committee first. But we will move it over to the Government Committee, Government and Transportation, and we'll ask for a subsequent referral back to this committee because it will have a revenue impact no matter what we do with it. But as a courtesy to Senator George, and since he's worked on this bill in the interim, the Government Committee is not an improper committee to hear this bill.
So, Mr. Chair?
Yes, Senator Byrd.
This isn't one that we will, if they decide to move it, we're going to lose the subsequent referral. Since just glancing at it, it looks like they're trying to change the system, move away from state sale of alcohol to state taxation of alcohol.
There is, this is a pretty big bill. I would suggest that
it's pretty big.
With the subsequent referral, we get to see the product, but the heavy lifting would be done by Senator George. So if it did have a strip out of the subsequent referral, I believe it would come back from the floor because it will have a revenue impact no matter what happens.
I hope we don't waste too much time on it, Mr. Chairman.
Let's open the public hearing and possible work session on Senate Bill 909. The chair will entertain a motion to refer this bill to the Transportation and Government Committee with a subsequent referral to Ways and Means, or to Revenue, Senate Revenue.
We need to be in a work session, though.
We are in work session.
Thank you.
So moved.
The Vice Chair, Senator Breyer, moves that Senate Bill 909 be moved to the Committee on Transportation and Government with a subsequent referral to
Senate Revenue.
Are we going to stand on protocol here?
I think we reported it out, but that's okay.
Without recommendation.
Without recommendation.
Okay, we're reporting that without recommendation to the Committee on Transportation and Government. Any questions about the motion?
I object to the motion.
An objection to the motion.
Yeah.
Let's call the roll.
Yeah, this is crazy. This is this whole thing of, you know, we're not going to play this veto game with the governor, but we still introduce these kind of bills, you know? That's one of the 170 bills.
Roll call, please.
Aye.
No.
I actually thought this was a no. Yes.
Aye.
Aye.
Aye. Motion passes, and we have made our referral out. Close the work session, close the public hearing on Senate Bill 909.
Mr. Chairman.
Senator.
I'm afraid we're not having much of an impact on our clerk. You can't even remember a name.
Senator,
she called my
Senator Minnis, I believe that that is a sign of ultimate professionality.
Who did that?
Also, it shows the relative importance of the body to people outside this building.
Outside?
Outside. Oh, colleagues, what now? Let's do Senate Bill 469, please. Okay. Good morning. I'll ask Ms. Martin-Mahar to give us a brief backgrounder on Senate Bill 469. What is the effect of the bill? And then we'll go to public hearing.
Okay. Mr. Chairman and committee members, this is the bill that we heard last time dealing with the senior deferral program. And Department of Revenue is ready to discuss some of the things that they see in this bill that they can do administratively. So.
Okay. Then let's... I wonder aloud, why haven't we done them? That was let's go ahead and open the public hearing on Senate Bill 469. And we'll bring forward John Phillips from the Department of Revenue and Shirley Leeper.
Good. More? Don't invite that other guy up, Mr. Chair. It just caused a lot of confusion.
On the other hand,
we're moving that county up to Washington anyway and redistricting, so don't worry. Just keep them quiet. This session, we're fine.
This, colleagues, as you remember, was a bill brought by Senator Farioli, who assumed that there would be no change without legislation to coincide the deferral process between disabled and seniors. And what, in fact, has happened is the staff has shown up with the solution to our problem. Let's go ahead, Mr. Phillips. What is the solution to our problem?
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. My name is John Phillips of the Department of Revenue, and with me is Shirley Leeper, a program specialist in the Senior Deferral Program. We did meet after this bill and talked with the chair and outlined in the information that's being passed out to you right now some of the things we're doing in the program already, and we think that the kinds of things we're doing address the streamlining issues that the bill attempts to encourage, and I can go through each of the steps or at your wish, whichever you would have me do.
I would appreciate just a recap of what it is that we're doing to make this deferral program more accessible to seniors and the disabled who've been added as a group of folks that can apply for deferral.
Okay. Be happy to do that. What we're currently doing, and just a reminder, this senior deferral and program was, there was a disabled component added last session, and it's typical of most sessions that there's a change, and sometimes a significant change to the senior deferral program each session. So each session we're rethinking the program and we're re-looking at it. We're seeing what we can do to streamline it, and we end up doing that each session because of changes, which are good, but it just gives us another opportunity to rethink it. So some of the things we're doing are we're continuing things that we have been doing relative to public education. We do go out and speak at every opportunity we get. We work with the media in making releases so that seniors are aware of the program, aware of the changes. We also provide assistance to Senior and Disabled Services program with the Department of Human Resources, the case managers there. We work very closely with them. And there are local organizations, which we refer to as the gatekeeper organizations, that provide sort of a menu of options for seniors, and we work with them in providing information about our senior and disabled program to that organization that helps seniors directly. We have set up a website that is available to search information about that program, and there was a question asked about the size and type in that of that program, and we looked up the website information, and it is alterable in terms of the font size and, you know, making it 120% or whatever so that the print is large enough for them to read. We have an email address specifically for them. We set up voicemail boxes, and we have a 1-800 telephone number, fax number, and email address. We are working on other changes that we haven't accomplished yet. Some of those are relative to the form itself, which the bill spoke to. What we've tried to do in the bill, on the form, is to rethink what we need to accomplish the, you know, approval or denial of the application. And some things we're seriously considering and just haven't got them off the form yet are the driver's license number, and there's a list on page 2, the attaching the income tax information, power of attorney document, and some other things. Right now, the form requires about 1/4 of it to complete it by the senior. And the rest, the senior then gives to the county assessment and tax office. They process some information and then forward it on to us. So there is a very, very small portion on the form, about equal to the information, not exactly, but about equal to the information that the bill was seeking to reduce the form to. So we think we're getting there. There are some system changes also that we've been working with, and maybe Shirley can speak to that.
Mr. Chairman and committee, for the record, my name is Shirley Leeper with the Department of Revenue Deferral Unit. Some of the things that we're working on changing and some of the things we've already changed as technology has been available to us is we use the Internet to search vital records so we can determine if a taxpayer has deceased or not. That streamlines the process in not having to send out letters or make additional telephone calls trying to locate some of these people. We have added or in the process of adding information onto the department's 1-800 voice information so people can call in and get individual information on the programs. We have created a FTP site for our exchange of information between the counties to streamline our exchange of data there in our payment process. And we did a test on that last year. This year it will be fully implemented for every county to take advantage of that. We have added, as John said, the email system out there, and the counties can also send us their information email, or they even get an option of using a CD in addition to the FTP sites this year. So we're constantly looking at what technology has changed and how can we better work the program and be more efficient that way. We are looking at reprogramming the database to search for the property by address. So if someone calls in and they do not have the account number or possibly the correct name of the taxpayer or Social Security number, we can then look at a database for the actual address. And so we're looking at that to see if we can accomplish that. And Presently, each county sends us a listing after the payments are made of the accounts we paid on and the current address they're showing. We're looking to see if there's a way we can take information from the county and match that against our system. So that's something we're going to be looking at here in the next year also. So those are some major things we're looking at right now.
One of the goals of the program staff is to return phone calls within 2 hours to anybody calling in. So we receive a large number of phone calls from seniors. In fact, the Furniture System Planning Committee is considering installing 7-foot cubicle walls because the volume of the conversation between our staff and seniors is so loud due to the inability to hear sometimes, and we're raising our voices to communicate with them, and we do have a lot of good communication. We have people in that unit that are very sensitive to the elderly and the concerns there, and they're taking it very seriously. One thing I might ask or point out is that part of what happens every session, as I mentioned, is that the program there's some rethinking going on with the program, and that's not unlike this session. And on the final page, I listed some of the bills, and it's not complete. There's two bills that I was unaware of that found out this morning to add to this list that would change the program. So I just ask for your consideration when these bills come through, and some of them will be starting in the House, obviously, and have already been heard over there, that the various age thresholds, the various income thresholds, and the various qualifications for the programs and the funding mechanisms, in terms of streamlining, it helps us if these different concepts are thought of as one policy decision, and it helps us so that we don't reprogram quite as frequently, and that saves money for the program. I might add one addendum to all that in addressing Senator Minnis's question. His question at the last hearing was about volunteers, and we did have quite a number of emails about that to various people, including our personnel office and our income tax section and Shirley's unit, and we contacted other agencies to find out their use of seniors and volunteers. And we do and have in the past used student workers in the program, and as of recently, because of such a large change in the program from the last session, adding the disability, we discontinued that temporarily. We were having up to 3 part-time workers in the program, and we replaced those 3 with 1 full-time worker just because we didn't know the program. It was changing, and so training someone on a program we didn't know and then trying to do the work was not productive. So we may be going back to that kind of a concept, but right now we're sort of in the bringing the program up mode. We do work with AARP and a tax aid program on the income tax side, and volunteers are taken in and trained, and then they're helping elderly and other people to fill out their tax forms. So we do use that within the department. I just wanted to get back to you. Anything else we can answer?
Senator Byer has a question.
John, I'm trying to draw back to memory what we were talking about the last time. Seemed like one of the concerns that I had was the confusion for seniors, and one was the annual filing. And it seems like you're saying that you could eliminate that. And is that something you could do administratively, or do you need statutory authority?
Maybe Shirley could address that.
Chairman and Senator Byers, there is no annual filing requirement at this time. That bill had it so that the annual statement would have to be returned, and we have not required that to happen.
Okay.
We take care of that in other modes so that we don't have the confusion out there with them having to return that, because a lot of them, we figured about 30% would not return it, and that would have taken a manual process to contact them.
Okay. So the way it works now is the person files once, they're determined eligible or ineligible. If they're eligible, they're assumed to continue to be eligible unless they report that there's been a change in income?
Well, they a change of income, or if they are disqualified for death, moving, whatever. But we get a lot of that information from the counties. Yeah. But they just file once, and they are not required to file an income tax return unless they're over the threshold.
That's pretty simple.
Further questions? Colleagues, sometimes the best bill is no bill at all. This, I think, has focused attention on the blending of the disabled tax deferral program, which was created in the last legislative session, with the existing senior tax deferral program. I really appreciate the fact that now the agency's been focused on the issue and asked to sort of stand and deliver what their plan is for making this happen. It's on the public record. I have no question that the outline that you've given us for the existing changes that have been made and the proposed changes that you've detailed in your testimony this morning will occur. And the reason I'm certain of that is that actually there's two reasons I'm certain of that. One is that this is the committee that has legislative oversight over the Department of Revenue, and that all of you members may be called back during the legislative session or during the interim to review the progress of the agency in accomplishing the smooth blending of these two programs into one. And I'm also going to attach this testimony to a memo to Senator Yee, who is the person who's in charge of the single most powerful committee in the legislature, which is the Benchmarks Committee. And so we will put these benchmarks before your agency and say that these performance measures will be looked at in the subsequent interim and the subsequent session to make sure that the good intentions actually occurred. And I think that's the best thing that we can do, is put this little bill to bed. It's not unusual for a member to kill their own bill. I think that's probably what we ought to do in this case. But I think this is a good day's work in terms of letting folks know there's a new deferral program for disabled and seniors, and that this now will be a much smoother, much easier, and in the future, a lot more convenient mechanism for them to access these benefits. So, any questions for this committee?
Mr. Chair, that would be sort of like an 11th commandment to the Department of Revenue.
Which is? Thou shalt do what they say. Thou says thou shalt do. Yes, exactly right.
Good. I like theology and politics.
Well, that would be a brush with culture, wouldn't it, and, Senator Corcoran?
Yeah.
We'll go ahead and close the public hearing, and in all likelihood, colleagues, this is the last we'll see of Senate Bill 469. Thank you. We have before us Senate Bill 555, and I would like the staff to come and make a brief presentation about what this bill does. It's a... It's an entirely serious question and issue about whether or not folks will have equity on those policies that were issued before January 1st, 2000. But let's go ahead and have the orientation and begin with that.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. Senate Bill 555 expands eligibility for the current long-term care insurance tax credit to include premiums paid on long-term care insurance policies issued prior to January 1, 2000. In the original legislation, House Bill 2080, which was passed in 1999, the credit was limited to policies issued on or after January 1, 2000. The original version of the bill considered wider eligibility, but mainly for revenue impact reasons, it was trimmed. And in the final version of the bill, the credit was available only for policies issued on or after January 1, 2000. This, if I may, this change would become effective in the current 2001 tax year under Senate Bill 555.
So the general revenue, general fund revenue impact is substantial. $9 million of this ahead of us, and 10.4 on the biennium followed.
That's correct, Mr. Chair.
And do we have an idea of what the, in relative terms, what the revenue impact was for the prospective portion of the law that was approved in the last legislative session? Give me a relative idea about what the look forward did to revenue.
We do, Mr. Chair. The impact of Senate or 1999 House Bill 2080 was estimated to be $200,000 in the 99-01 biennium, and about double that, $455,000 in 2001-2003. that was the impact of limiting it to new policies only.
And, of course, the intention there was to incent the production, incent the placement of this long-term care insurance prospectively. But what we did was we did this prospectively for new policies, but we did not do it retrospectively for existing policies. Is that correct?
Mr. Chair, that is correct.
And did that force people to change carriers or to seek new insurance in order to take advantage of the tax credits?
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, I am not personally aware of those circumstances, although that would be possible. Someone could do that and qualify for the credit.
Well, let's open the public hearing on Senate Bill 555, and we'll bring forward Mr. McDaniel from Clatsop County, who's here representing himself. We'll open the Senate hearing on Senate Bill 555. Mr. McDaniel, welcome. Do you wish to bring reinforcements with you?
No, I think I can handle it.
Okay, that's you're welcome this morning. Yeah.
Thank you, Chairman. Thank you, members of the committee. I appreciate this opportunity. Give you a little bit about my background so you know where I'm coming from a little bit. Excuse me. I've got a master's degree in business, an accounting degree. I've been practicing in the field of accounting since 1982, primarily in the area of taxation. I've taught business, taxation, and economics courses at community college level since 1982. I'm presently an elected member of the Port of Astoria Commission, also currently a member of the Investment and Budget Committees of the Astoria Senior Center, belong to several military organizations such as the American Legion, Disabled American Veterans, and Retired Officer Association. So I am familiar with some of the political ramifications of bills. I'm familiar with the needs of seniors and also the economic and tax aspects of this bill. I was the one that asked that the bill be introduced. As was stated, current legislation allows tax credit only for policies initiated after January 1st of the year 2000. It was a measure to minimize the tax impact of such a tax credit, I realize. There are some problems, though. One of the problems is that in some cases, an individual will go out and get a new policy, thus qualifying with the new policy while the old policy would not qualify. I have one tax client who did that this year. A bigger problem is that for many people who would apply for a new policy, the premiums would be higher on the new policy than the old because the person is now older and may also have some medical problems. So in that particular case, the increased premiums might be more than the potential tax saving by changing policies. An even more serious problem is a situation where a person cannot get a new policy. I had an individual call me, I guess it was Saturday, stating that he felt that he was being discriminated against. He was over 80 years old. It was suggested to him by one of his representatives that he get a new policy. He contacted the insurance company and said, no, you're too old to get a new policy. That doesn't affect the revenue aspect per se, but I think what we're going to see is that there are going to be some people who have purchased policies for over a period of time. Their income may well go down, and they may not be able to afford the policies anymore without some type of assistance, such as this tax credit. And for every person who drops a policy, we're creating a fiscal liability down the road because the taxpayers of the state of Oregon may eventually have to pick up funding for the care of these people who no longer feel they can afford the insurance. So we've got a situation where right now we save a little bit as far as tax expenditures are concerned, but down the road maybe we're acquiring a much larger liability through the short-term savings. It's also a matter of equity. It's hard to say, hard for me to say what the actual tax impact would be, other than that this credit is a maximum of $500 per year per tax return, whether it be an individual tax return or a joint tax return. In order to get the full credit, this individual, this couple, would have to be paying premiums in excess of $3,333 per year in premiums. It's been my experience, the people I've talked to, that most people don't fall in this high category. In the case of my wife and myself, the tax credit that we would obtain with our current policy, if it were qualified, would be $330 a year rather than the $500. I've got a tax client, her savings, the person who went out and got a new policy, $440 in a tax credit. So this is pretty well the background. I've given you about the same information in this handout. So we're talking about minimal loss of current tax revenue. We're talking about the possibility of a larger liability in the future on the part of the state, and also we're talking about a certain degree of equity. So that's... Oh, one other thing. This morning I received a document from the Medicaid Long-Term Care Quality and Reimbursement Advisory Council, and it was addressed to Oregon legislators. And it says the council unanimously opposes the proposed budget because they believe that it would result in grave trauma for thousands of elderly and disabled Oregonians and decimate the Oregon long-term care system. It also mentions Oregon long-term care system is in a crisis, experiencing great difficulty in recruiting and maintaining staff. And finally, that failure to reimburse nursing home rates would cause additional closures and result in trauma for clients as well as their families. So we're already in a situation where the state is providing some of this long-term care because people don't have the personal assets or an insurance policy to cover this situation. So that is the end of my testimony.
Questions for our witness this morning, Mr. McDaniel? Questions? Mr. McDaniel, thank you very much. I think you've given us a good overview of what the facts are in this circumstance.
Thank you very much.
Appreciate your testimony. Senator George, when we opened the public hearing on Senate Bill 555, you were conducting legislative business. Would you like to orient the committee to your intention in bringing the bill?
Well, you probably heard, you did just hear from the person who brought this issue to me, and of course, the concern here is what are we going to do about folks providing for themselves an adequate amount of protection? Idea being is that maybe there's a way to give incentive for that person to provide their own. And as you just heard, if we don't do that, we have the implication that then that person will become dependent and have to have the state provide that sort of protection. So that's the idea behind the bill, and I really appreciate having the bill at least heard, and I'm kind of shocked if you see the fiscal impact of it, but the revenue impact. And hope we will at least put this in our portfolio of consideration as to what we're going to do about the issue of health care.
Well, Senator George, your question that you just raised about the relative size of the fiscal impact is one that I've just been discussing with our certifiably smart folks who are our staff to our committee. And maybe we should talk a little about how the fiscal impact is calculated. Okay. It is large. Although the testimony that we just heard is that if an individual had the maximum tax credit, they'd also have to have premiums totaling about $3,300 annually. And that seems to be an awfully high premium for even an extended care policy. So how did we calculate the impact on this issue?
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, the revenue impact is based on some national data and some sharing out of that and matching that with some Oregon data. We identified approximately 30,000 policies in Oregon. Average long-term care premium was about $1,300 per year, increasing at a fairly steep rate. And that would make the average credit, at least in the beginning, around $170 per year, again, increasing at a about 2% rate per year. So this revenue impact is based on about 30,000 policies and growing at about $170 per credit per year.
So the revenue impact did take into consideration the variables of members, the amount of the taxpayer income, and the estimations of by category of who would make applications.
Of course, Mr. Chair.
Okay, so we have a dynamic model here rather than just, it isn't just an aggregate of $500 for all of the folks that might apply.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, we had to make some assumptions about how many taxpayers would apply and would qualify, and some assumptions about what their tax liability would be, some assumptions about what their long-term care premiums would be, and then we built a little model to try and balance all of those.
Okay. And that's where we came up with about $9 million in the fiscal impact for the first year, and then
10.4,
and then 10.4 for the following. Thank you. Senator Beyer has a question.
Thank you. Ed, so I'm sort of looking back. When we passed in 1999-2080, the estimated impact was about $200,000 a year versus... And that was just looking at adding new people. So it was the assumption that it wouldn't be much of an incentive. Apparently if it's $9 million now, there were already a lot of people that were buying it.
Senator Beyer, members of the committee, we assume that there are about 1,500 to 1,600 policies added per year.
How many are there in place?
About 30,000, near as we can tell.
And the estimate was this would add how many?
The estimate underlying the House Bill 2080 from last session, covering the new policies only, was that about 1,500 policies would be added in the first year, and that would increase at a rate of about 5 to 10% per year beyond that.
Is there any assumption, Ed, that it's 1,500, about how many of those would be additional ads versus people who would have done it anyway?
Senator Beyer, members of the committee, no. We didn't feel we were able to make an estimate like that. I believe it was the original intention, was expressed by the committees that worked on this bill originally, that this credit be offered as an incentive for people to buy policies who didn't currently have them or to start policies.
I guess that following along Senator Beyer's line of questioning, which I think is excellent, we must have looked at the potential savings to social systems in Oregon generated by having folks acquire long-term catastrophic health care, as opposed to having the state through the Oregon Health Plan or other mechanisms be the care provider of last resort. And I'm sure that produced some sort of a savings ratio. Can you give us a general sense of how those issues were dealt with in the previous discussions? I guess I don't expect you to go back over the whole process of getting us to the previous legislation, but you know, obviously having a population covered by health care produces some cost savings in the Oregon Health Plan and other health care provision mechanisms. Can you characterize that for us in some way?
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, I'm not able to recall exactly what the analysis was, the fiscal impact for that bill. House Bill 2080 may include some information to that effect. But I think one of the problems with it was that the benefits are backloaded. So the savings would come about in the future, whereas the costs are up front for the tax credit.
Mr. Chair.
Senator Beyer.
At the maximum credit, what is it, 300, something like that? Mm-hmm.
333.
I mean, you would...
maximum credit's 500, but average would be allowed.
You would wipe that out. I mean, if people ever got to the point when they're in assisted living long-term care, you'd wipe that out in about the first 10 days, the first month.
Oh, get a flu shot.
Right.
I understand. I guess what I'm trying to do is figure out...
how we got there?
Well, the idea is if more people recover, there should be less cost for the state in terms of long-term health care.
That's not true.
It isn't true.
Well, Senator George had his hand up. Go ahead and get him.
Yeah, and Ed, I was going to ask a question similar to Senator Byers, and that is, and I think you just answered my question, and that is, we're anticipating that this will, in fact, be a good thing, because let me set it up first before I ask a question. Right now, we're looking at seniors who are facing, if they're in a mobile home, parking creates rent, we have power charges going up, medications are going up, and that person is facing a limited amount of money. And most of the time, with seniors, we're talking about fixed. And if, in fact, that person is looking at their premium and saying, can I afford to make this or not, and they decide that they cannot, then we can assume that there might be a shift, as the testimony indicates, over to dependent upon the state for their health care. I mean, is that a correct assumption that scenario could come to pass?
Senator George, members of the committee, I don't think I'm qualified to answer that, but it makes sense. I think I'm a surface so far.
Mr. Chair.
Senator Corcoran.
Yeah, I think what we're trying to do is make an actuarial out of Ed, and that's not his role. The fact of the matter is, I mean, you really have to look at the population that's being considered for a credit in this bill. These are people, and I'm thinking of this along the lines of my mother, I just put in assisted living. These are people who would have to have enough discretionary income to be spending $3,300 to get the $500 credit in the first place, with all their additional costs, as Senator George so eloquently put it. And so you're talking about a population that would probably be above the fixed income population. So then you get into the question of that population, and this is why it's such a difficult actuarial assumption, and I think this bill properly goes to Ways and Means for analysis. But then you're faced with the situation of, for instance, in my mom's case, of a spend down. So she spends down her resources in the facility she's in, then she becomes a Medicaid recipient. But trying to project a population that would, A, utilize the tax benefit, we would have to do a financial assessment of the families who currently take this kind of insurance and an analysis of the people who took advantage of the break since we gave them the break, as opposed to looking retrospectively back. I think it's just a very, very difficult analysis. I understand one can question the revenue impact on this, you know, both ways, but I just think that it's a pretty amazing task that you're asking, you know, Mr. Waters to do. I mean, I think his answer was totally appropriate.
Mm-hmm. Senator Corcoran, I appreciate that. We do ask extraordinary things from our staff members occasionally.
Which is why they confuse us so much, Mr. Chair. I want to point that out.
Senator Byers.
Well, who this really applies to is not real. I guess it applies to seniors, but it really applies to people more in their 40s and 50s who would start buying this and have income. There are obviously people who are older than that who might have that, but chances are, once they retire, their taxable income is pretty low, and a tax credit doesn't do you any good unless you're paying taxes. So you're really talking about people, frankly, our age, as a credit against them. And so the cost being paid, it's pretty mean. My sense of looking at it, and I guess I was on revenue, and we were in the legislature last time and voted for this thing, is one of fairness. And it strikes me, if you're going to offer a tax credit, you ought to offer it to everybody in a similar situation. Is really the issue. I mean, there may be some question about whether it's good fiscal policy to have the credit at all, or whether, given limited resources, this is the place to focus them.
Senator Barr, your arguments are, as usual, on the topic and on the point, but the other distressing unintended consequence is this leads to churning, which is a feature of an unfortunate feature in many service sector industries where people are currently covered with a service or a benefit, and then a new feature comes out, and folks are encouraged then to let go of the old features and benefits and move to the new coverage to take advantage of some new feature. When they get there, they find that possibly the benefits or the service or the cost partly justify the acquisition of the new feature. Churning, in the worst case, just produces revenue for the service sector industry, and no new benefit or no new positive effect to the individual that buys that service. Unfortunately, I think there are some people that are incented to drop a policy that may be at a lower premium or have better benefits for a newer policy just to take advantage of the tax. I don't think that was intended in that bill, but here we are in this situation. Colleagues, we have one other witness that has signed up for this. What I notice sitting at the back of the room is a gentleman who I think probably is well known to all of us, Representative Bob Montgomery, who has a long distinguished career in the legislature and in public service in the state of Oregon. I welcome you, Representative Montgomery, to this committee room and enjoy seeing you in the building.
You thankful you still have it.
With our great
my lips are sealed.
Richard Burke has signed up to testify on 555. Mr. Burke, please come forward.
I want to congratulate former Representative Montgomery on still having some hair, unlike a lot of us.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, once again, as usual, I'm speaking on my own behalf rather than officially on behalf of
the committee. Happened to be in the neighborhood, Mr. Burke.
A good friend. I don't have a lot to add to what Don McDaniel said, but I want to stress a couple of points that I want brought out very succinctly. And what this is that we do not feel that the revenue impact statement reflects the fact that Senator George touched on, and that is that people may buy these policies when they're in their 40s and 50s and maintain them at a certain premium, but as their income falls a little bit and they have increased expenses that they have to decide what to pay for, they decide to drop the premium because they know that the state will take care of them, and then bang, we're paying for that too. But the second issue I wanted to bring up is just the concept of encouraging and rewarding people taking responsibility for their own welfare. And we have a situation that I think Senator Farrelly touched on, saying that we are rewarding these people for being responsible for their own health care, but we're not rewarding these people who have been doing it all the time, not being induced by a new tax credit, but they've just been there before it was cool, so to speak. And I think that expanding it to these folks too will send a good message to all Oregonians as we age, because the population is aging. It'll encourage more people to get these plans, and then the government will save money in the long run. So as I said, I had very little to add to what Don McDaniel said, but I wanted to stress those particular points, and I thank you very much.
Thank you, Mr. Burke. Questions for Mr. Burke? Hearing and seeing none. Colleagues, we did not, thank you, Mr. Burke, we did not schedule this bill for a work session this morning. There is some question about whether or not the co-chairs would look favorably on our referral of a bill that I think presents an important principle, and I think Mr. Burke expressed the principle well. Why do we treat taxpayers inequitably and differently in these issues? But it's just another $9 million that we'd have to come up with in order to fund this bill. So what I'm going to do is close the public hearing, noting that we did not move to work session. The bill is still in this committee and still alive in this committee. I'm going to ask the co-chairs for their consideration of this issue, and I'll also remind the committee that as long as we have the bill, there's yet hope for some strategy to move it forward.
Mr. Chair,
question, Senator?
If I might, maybe if the Ed could talk with the human resources or the SBSD staff and get their professional insight in terms of if they see this long term, if there's a revenue savings for state taxpayers, and encouraging them. I guess one of the risk always is you may start somebody, as the witness said, may pick it up, you know, at our age. But it's a real different situation when you're working or if your company's paying for it. If it's an annual fee, when you get up to 65 or 70, when you're getting closer to maybe need it and then drop it, then all of that investment is gone. That's what insurance is all about.
Senator, I think you bring up an interesting point. The other thing is that we had an anticipated revenue impact in the bill that was passed in the 1999 legislative session. We have not had sufficient income tax filings to know what the revenue impact is. So we looked at a prospective situation and the adoption of the tax credit for last session, and so now we have gone through a year, 2 years. We still don't know what the effect is financially, and it'd be interesting to see if the revenue projections were close to what the actuarials will show us, what the actual filings will show us. The other thing is that maybe that we just have bought ourselves some time to